Hi, my name is Colleen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
My sobriety date is November 17th, 2014. I have a home group. It's a Fenwick Island Big Book meeting, and we meet Monday nights in Fenwick Island, right outside of Ocean City. And that's been my home group, ever since I got sober, almost 10 years ago. So I just want to thank Billy for asking me, inviting me to come speak. I was scheduled to come last year and had an emergency. One of my friends had to come and fill in. And just everyone that's here that contributed to putting this event together. I do a lot of these events where I live, and I know there's a lot of work that goes into them, the food, just getting everything together. And I've been really impressed so far, and I'm taking notes on how we can do better at some of our events. This stuff is great. I remember going to the first one of these I ever went to. And I was in Philadelphia, and I was like, oh my God, I was so excited, like filled with AA, and like just kind of wanted to run back home and see what do we do these events, where I live. I couldn't believe it. And my sponsor said, go to your intergroup meeting and ask about the workshop committee. So sure enough, like the next week I'm at the intergroup meeting. I didn't, I'd never been to a workshop where I live or anything like that. And I took my sponsee, and it just so happened it was election night, and they were making the new committees for the following year. There was nobody there on workshops, and they were like, "You're interested? That's great. Here's your assignment." And wow, that was like such a wild ride. I did it for so long that my sponsor had to tell me to please step away. She was like, "You're 2 years," because then during COVID, I ended up doing it. And I was like, well, then no one else is going to do it. I have to keep going. And she's like, step away. Find yourself some girls, get them, show them what you do. And, I finally, this past year, finally stepped away. And I got some girls to kind of step in. And now I'm getting to watch them do these events and recruit people and get to know speakers. And oh my God, just think that I was like selfishly trying to hold that in and not share it with everyone. So I love these kind of things. And I've been taught to say yes in Alcoholics Anonymous, the program that saved my life. It's funny, when I was listening to Chandler, I felt like it's so many similarities. I do feel like I was an alcoholic from day one. The day that I took my first drink, I could not control the amount that I drank. And when I tried to stop, I could. But in the beginning, I never tried to stop drinking. I didn't want to stop drinking. I loved drinking. I loved what it did for me. I come from an Irish Catholic family, right outside of Philadelphia, and drinking is just, it's what I knew. It's what I knew. There was alcohol no matter what, at any event, any family thing that we went to. When there was family involved or friends, there was alcohol, whether it was beer or liquor. And from an early age, I have two sisters, and going back through pictures when we were young, there's like all these pictures of me with like beers in my hand. And it was kind of like a joke. Oh, Colleen liked the taste of beer at age five. And they would give it to me and I would taste it. But it was funny, not until I got sober did I realize that like there's no pictures like that of my sisters. It was just me. And it was kind of like a joke in the family. But I do know, I remember, early on, my parents like giving us alcohol at a pretty, 14, 15. And then, when I turned probably 15 or 16, I had my first drunk, my first like experience with alcohol. And it was Old English 40, because back then that was like the only thing we could get. And I just remember that experience. Like, I remember like it was yesterday, the feeling of it going down and like, all of a sudden feeling different. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I wanted it more and more. Like I said, when I started drinking, I couldn't stop. And I didn't realize, until I came into AA that that's not a normal reaction to alcohol. But when you learn to surround yourself with people that kind of, have that same reaction and that enjoy drinking like you do, so from an early on, I drank, I would drink like that every time I picked up a drink, but it was only on the weekends, or it was only, when there was a party. I wasn't drinking every night or anything like that. And I managed to get through life, early on. But there was a lot of experiences like at a young age with binge drinking and alcohol. I kind of discovered at an early age that growing up, I was like the average kid. I did okay in school. I tried sports. I did okay. But when it came to alcohol, I like found something that I was good at. I was good at drinking. I could drink a large amount of alcohol and still walk and still have conversations. When I was 16 years old, I was driving around in a car. We were drinking that night, I challenged a friend of mine. We each had like the big bottles of Southern Comfort, not like the fifth, but like the big one. And it was who could finish the bottle first. And I was 16, and we were drinking out in the woods. And later on that night, I came to, and I was at a police station, and they were like blowing those horns at me, trying to like revive me. And so I was just like completely knocked out. And when they later on that night, they gave me a breathalyzer, and I blew a 0.54. And they gave it to me like three times, and then they called my dad, and his girlfriend showed up, and they said, "I can't believe your daughter's not dead right now because she could be." And we gave this breathalyzer to her three times. And I remember being in the jail cell. I remember them picking me up. So I, and I just remember the next day that word got like spread like wildfire through our high school. And the next day I was walking through high school, and I was a 10th grader, and the seniors were like high-fiving me, and they were like 0.54. And like, wow. And all of a sudden, like, I was somebody, it's like in our book how it says, "I had arrived." And like, I had arrived that day. And all of a sudden, like, I felt, like I started hanging with the older kids and the older crowds, and other things got involved. And if my life continued like that, if we were, there was a party in the woods, I was the girl upside down doing the longest keg stand, and I was like the one, just kind of like hanging with the older kids and, people. I was hanging with the guys, and I was drinking more than like, and most of my peers. I had an older sister. So when you're young and you're trying to drink and fit in, an older sister is very helpful because they have the friends and they can get stuff when things that are hard to get. And I knew from an early age that like I needed alcohol in my life. And it's not that or it's not that easy to get alcohol at that age. And I was like, I have to find a way so that I can get alcohol easily. And everybody had like the fake IDs back then. And but they never, they kind of worked, and I didn't like that feeling. So I became on a mission to figure out how I'm gonna get a real fake ID so I can get alcohol anytime I want. And I think I was 17, and I started calling every state that I could possibly drive to. There was no computers, no cell phones. So like I'm researching, like real research, making phone calls. And I figured out I can go to the state of New Jersey with my sister's birth certificate. I got a fake address in New Jersey at 17 years old. I had my sister's birth certificate and social security card, and I walked in the motor vehicle center, and I came out with the ID that said I was 21. And I thought, like, I had arrived, because now I could not only buy alcohol for myself, I could buy it for everybody else, and I was important. And that's just how important alcohol was to me from a very, very early age. And when you drink like that, there's definitely things start to happen and consequences. And I started getting arrested. And I realized that when I was like senior, I was like, I gotta get my life together. I have to go to college. I didn't want to. I come from a family of very, very potential alcoholics. Nobody in my family is sober, but they all could definitely have a seat here. And I watched kind of their lives. I didn't want that for myself. So I kind of slowed. I wouldn't say I slowed down, because every time I drank alcoholically, but I spaced out when I drank. I got myself through college, and and again, every time I picked up, you never knew what was going to happen. And then when after college, I got a job. I was working for a I moved to Ocean City to go to college, Ocean City, Maryland. And I like fell in love with Ocean City because there are bars on every corner, and there's a lot of drinking and just partying, and I absolutely loved it. But I decided like I was gonna live there the rest of my life. And I found a job which would allow me to live there, and I could kind of still drink like I wanted to. And I started working for a dredging company, and we do like beach replenishment projects on the East Coast. And I found myself like traveling on the road, and nothing is better for an alcoholic than like being on the road and kind of living in a hotel room by yourself. I mean, it's like you can work all day and then come home and drink, and like nobody, because at a young age, I was at the point, I was past the bars and all of that stuff. I was at the point where I just wanted to drink alone by myself and get all the alcohol in that I possibly could. And I kind of knew that I didn't drink normally, but I was like, I didn't want to share that. And I didn't want to, I would go out to the bars and try to drink normally, and I would have the bottle in my purse. I would have a bottle in my car, because number one, I was cheap, and I wasn't going to spend like all my money on alcohol. So I'm like, well, those people, I was going to waste all my money. And also, I didn't want people to see the way I drank. So it became this thing where at all these family events, they'd be like, why is Colleen so drunk? Like, she's drinking so much and she only had like one glass of wine. And meanwhile, I'm like chugging vodka in the bathroom because at the end of my drinking, or not the end, like the last 10 years of my drinking, I drank like the typical alcoholic. I drank warm vodka out of the bottle. Wherever, and it was everywhere. It was everywhere. It's like it was in my purse, my car. I kept vodka in the under the sink at my work in the bathroom because I was the only female in the office. So like next to the toilet bowl cleaner was like a bottle of vodka that I could chug when I like went to the bathroom at work. So it got to the point where I just drank. I was drinking 24/7. I remember the first day that I left work and I went home at lunch and I decided, oh, I'm gonna have a glass of wine. And then, alcohol is a progressive disease, and my alcoholism progressed very rapidly, in my late 20s. And I always think about that because I see a lot of people that it's like I watch them and it's just kind of it's progressing, but it's slowly. And I progress hard and fast, and I'm so grateful for that because that led me here sooner. I could have went on for probably another 10 years, and I watch people like that, and I feel for them because because the suffering, it's like so slow, it can be so slow and so painful. And by the time, when I took this job that I had, I only had like one or two arrests, drunk drivings, but they were in a, it was in another state. So they were kind of hidden off my record. And when they hired me, I had a pretty good clean driving record besides that. And they didn't see the DUIs. And then after I got the job, I worked there for 6 years. And in that time frame, I got three more DUIs. I didn't have a license and I was driving company vehicles. I was driving without a license, all these things, so my drinking kept getting worse. And by the time towards the end, I was driving in Atlantic City. It was 7 o'clock in the morning and I got into a horrible accident and I left the scene and all these things. And I ended up in a hotel room and I was hiding out and the cops came and needless to say, I completely lost my job. They didn't even have to fire me because I just left. I knew what was going to happen. And the next day, I kept getting these phone calls, and they were like, "I don't. We didn't understand. Like, why were you so drunk at 7 o'clock in the morning?" And it was on my way to work. Like, that's not normal people. That doesn't happen. And it was just because I never stopped drinking. I drank with. I slept with vodka under my pillow. I didn't even like. I would just kind of roll over and swig from the bottle. And I lost my job and I lost, like, I felt like I lost everything, but I still didn't think I had a problem. I thought I could control my alcohol. And I thought if I could just stop for a long enough period, then because I had terrible, terrible withdrawals and DTs, terrible, to the point where I knew that I needed 7 to 10 days for me, for the shaking to stop, for the shaking, for the hallucinations. I knew that it would take that long. And every once in a while, I would go 7 to 10 days and I would start to feel better. And then, of course, because I'm an alcoholic, I would drink again. And after that, I went through job after job. And I took this job for this company. And they were like, they knew my history. And they were like, listen, we're going to give you this job. You just can't drink at work. And I'm like, okay. And they were like, well, no. Like, I don't care how much you drink after work. You could drink, but you just can't come to work drunk. And I'm like, yeah, no problem. Like, my life depends on it. Like, I can't come to work drunk. And I think I lasted like 2 weeks. And the next thing I know, I'm on like a blackout, heading out of the Ocean City Inlet on a boat in the middle of winter. And I'm driving the boat. And I don't know where I am. I don't know what's, it was just horrible because I couldn't stop drinking. And finally, enough is enough. And it was crazy. Chandler talked about rehab. And my sister said to me, "Kinky, you don't, she begged and pleaded and cried for me to go to a rehab." And I finally gave in. And I didn't go to the rehab with the intention to stop drinking at all. I just wanted to, I wanted to go to rehab to get detox. I knew that I needed a medical detox, just from, my experience and kind of what my body was going through. And then I was like, then I'm going to come out of detox and I'm going to drink normal. If I only drink a couple drinks a day, then I won't get to that point where I need detox. Like, I had this whole philosophy and craziness of how I was going to control my drinking. When I went into that rehab and I met a girl, I met my Ebby in rehab, and she told me like how she drank, and we were just sharing stories because I was like an alcoholic, full blown. There when you go into a rehab, my experience is 80% of the people in there are for other substances, and the alcoholics, at least where I went, it was a very small percentage, and we kind of were on the outside. You know, I hadn't, you know, I wasn't stealing from my family. I wasn't homeless. You know, I was barely getting by, but I was. And I also felt like that I was on a different level than the people that are suffering from drug addiction. I grew up with an older sister who I mentioned, and she suffered from a drug addiction, you know, hardcore heroin addiction. And I always thought that I was better, not better, but I always put myself on a different level than her because, you know, I didn't rob my grandparents. I didn't steal from my father and my mother. You know, I was just the alcoholic. And I remember in the being in that rehab and seeing people in there that were there for like the fifth time, sixth time, seven, like, and I was just like, I don't understand. Like, why would you come back to this place? You know, I really was like just kind of like putting, kind of looking down upon them. And they explained to me what alcoholism was and how once you have it, you have this allergy and you can't turn it off, you know? And it was kind of like, I was like, oh my God. Like, I could not believe that there was like an explanation for what was going on in my body that once you pick up a drink, you know, it triggers this allergy and then we can't stop. And it was kind of like almost like I was relieved, like knowing that there was like an explanation for it. But I also, they also told you when you left to, you know, go to AA and you know, go to these 90 meetings, get a sponsor, all these things. But when I left, I was like, oh, I understand. Thank you for the information, but like that's enough. Like I have to get a job. I have to like, you know, I'm about to lose my house. Like all these things. And even my family was like telling me, they were like, you know, you've done so much in your life, and you can do this. Like, you know, you have the willpower and the strength. And like, they were telling me all the things you're not supposed to tell one of us. You know, they also were encouraging me. They don't know anything about this disease or anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm so sure enough, I got out of there and I went to a couple meetings and I just did not have time. And I was just like, I had this attitude that like, I understand, I can't drink. And I kind of felt like, well, I can't drink now. Like, if you ask me if I can't drink the rest of my life, there's no way. Like, what about when I retire? What about if I get married? Like, you have to have a drink. And all these things. So I wasn't convinced. I wasn't fully convinced to my inner self that I'm an alcoholic. And what happened, you know, I lasted a couple months and I ended up back in that rehab. And I was one of those people that I looked down on, like here I am back again. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me because that relapse was like took me to some places that I had never been. It was like the worst time in my drinking, and I was beat down. Alcoholism beat me down, and I tried to stop, and I couldn't. And it was that point that I realized I can't do it on my own. And I just went into rehab with a whole different set of ears. I was willing. I wanted to listen. And when I got out, I was like, ooh, I like ran to AA. I ran to the meeting. Now that's my home group. And I was just welcomed. Like I couldn't believe how incredible these people were. And you know, they told me all the things to get a sponsor, go to a meeting every day. And I did. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days, or maybe 100. And the meetings I feel like were so important. And I always encourage, you know, newcomers to go to a lot of meetings because after 90 meetings, if you don't understand that you have to do these steps and you have to get a sponsor, or like you're never gonna make it. I mean, I just felt like it was like drilled in me over and over again. And that's what I did. And when I got a sponsor, I swear I would have done anything that my sponsor had asked because I was so desperate. I was so desperate never to feel that way again. And never to, you know, I was just so sick of hurting my family. And like, and that feeling of waking up and you have to have the alcohol, you know, you can't function, you can't brush your teeth. I remember I couldn't even, they were asking me to sign my name in rehab. I couldn't sign my name. My hand, I was shaking so bad that I couldn't, and I didn't know what day it was. I didn't know what year it was. They were asking me questions like, who's the president? And I'm like, I don't know. And I was like sober, but I felt like my brain was just mush. And I didn't think I was ever going to recover from that. You know, and I did what I was told to do in this program. And I didn't know what was happening. And it was kind of one of those things where, you know, the God, you know, when people talked about God, I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to hear. I was just like, I'll do what you're asking me to do, but I don't believe in God and I'm not going to believe in God. So let's just not talk about that. And my sponsor, she had me like calling women every day, going to meetings and like all these things. And then we started working the steps. And I remember we got to step one was not a problem for me. Like I knew my life was unmanageable. I knew that I was powerless just because of my history. I knew what alcohol had done for me. But then we got to step two, came to believe. I was not willing. Thank God that step says came to believe. Or the question in the big book says, are you willing to believe in a power bigger than yourself? And I was willing. I did not believe at that time, but I was willing because of people that I saw in the rooms, because of people that I heard, my sponsor, I heard her share her story. And I heard people share that they didn't believe in God and they came to this program and their lives got better. And I just wanted, I just wanted my life to be different because my whole life I just felt like I didn't belong. Kind of like what was talked about, like I didn't get the manual. Everybody else did, and I was just willing, and I'm just so grateful for that. And I went through the steps, and I remember saying to my sponsor, "Well, I don't know, I don't believe in God, so I don't know if I can go any further." And she was like, "Listen," she was like, "My job is not to convince you that there's a God." She's like, my job is taking these steps as it's outlined in the big book, and God will take care of the rest. And I'm just like, okay, and we go through this work. And what an like an amazing experience. One of the things, I sat down to do my fifth step. And as at the time I had been working, I got a job after I got sober, working for a smaller subcontractor of the company I used to work for. So I'm basically working for my old company, but as on a different level. And they knew that I had gotten sober, and they had like saw a change and different things. And I got a phone call that, they wanted to possibly talk to me for, have an interview with me to possibly, come back for work. And I was just like blown away. Like, are you kidding me? But part of that reason was, through this, at the time I was going through a fifth step with a second sponsor because my first sponsor had like a different way of going through the book and the steps, and everybody has their own different experience. But the first time around I was going through it, I was going through the amends process, and it was similar to what Chandler was sharing. Like I had some stuff in my company that just wasn't mine. It wasn't mine. And I was like thinking about all these different things of how I'm gonna like what the story I'm gonna tell, the lies, like, and my sponsor was like, you could just give it back. And I'm like, yeah, but then you're gonna know and like all this stuff. So sure enough, I like put the stuff in the mail and I put a letter on it and I made some phone calls and I just gave it back. But part of that is all of a sudden now some people know that I'm going through this program and I'm sober. I start making amends, and I had a lot of amends to make, a lot. It's a big company and I worked with a lot of people, and I hurt a lot of people. And these people are like all over the country. And the first person that I go to, was somebody that I remember had tried to get me some help, had approached me a couple times. And every time somebody approached me with that there was something wrong with me, I would divert. I would say, well, if you only knew, I have a sister who's a drug addict, and she's doing this and she's doing that, and I'm trying to deal with it. And that's why I'm not focused at work. That's why I might be drinking a little bit too much. And I always use my sister as an escape for that, for the reason why I was doing what I was doing. And sure enough, it was one of those situations where we're told the unexpected will happen. And this man told me that he had been sober for 30 years. And I couldn't believe it. And I was like, it was crazy because I think about it now. And no matter what job I was on or where I was at, he was always just this like, I just remember thinking this guy was such a good guy. He was a much older guy, probably somewhere around my dad's age. And no matter where we were, or what kind of stress was happening at work, he was always just this like solid, sane, like always had a sensible, like, and he never was out partying. And of course, he's one of us, and he had been sober practicing this program for a really long time. And all these things, that lined up, and I wasn't asking for anything. I was just, making my amends like I was taught to do. And these things kept happening. I made another amend with somebody that I crashed his car. I was driving his car and I got this huge accident, and I had this whole story on why I did it. And I had to go to him and just say, listen, I was drunk, and that's why I crashed your car, and I was offering to pay it. And I was so worried that I'm gonna have to report this and I'm gonna get fired. And before I can even finish the story, he just starts like bawling, crying. And I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, I can't stop drinking and I don't know what to do about it. And I was just like, oh my God. Like, and it was just one of those things that he could have cared less about the fender bender, that it happened years ago, and was just like, what are you doing? Like, how did you stop? And I got to share my experience with him and kind of like, you know, what happened in my life. And it was an amazing experience. And what I found is like every time I would make an amend, right, something would happen. Not all of them were great. I've had ones that were uncomfortable and awkward and strange. And I was like, God, I'm so glad that's over. Check it off the list. And I had, you know, and they didn't want to see me. And I had ones that were like that gave me the momentum and the motivation to keep going for the next one. Because that's kind of, you know, I think there's a reason. Thank God for good sponsorship and people guiding us through. Like my sponsor was like, to call me before you go in, we're talking. And then I'm calling right after, because if she just let me go on my own, I wouldn't have done it. I definitely like amends. I feel like it's that point in this program where we get to, and I needed the push. I needed the push to keep going. And I needed those experiences, because then I'm like, well, what's going to happen on the next one? You know? And it became like exciting. And I wanted to clean this stuff up, because the feeling you get, you just want to keep going. And it's one of those things. It's like I was asked, like, how free do you want to be? Like, you can stop now. I was feeling good. I was sober. I was, you know, I ended up getting that job back. You know, things were going good in my life. And you know, but I can't, you can't stop there. You have to keep going, because it's you don't know what's out there. You don't know how much more freedom and how much more peace is out there by going through this program fully. And it took definitely years. But what happened with that job is, you know, I took my job back, and I couldn't believe they were like, listen, we're gonna give you your job back, but we're gonna run your jogging record again. You know, after they ran my jogging record when I got fired, they realized they had to start running yearly driving checks on their employees. Because, and like that's still our company policy to this day. And it's crazy, because I've had some coworkers that have gotten like a DUI or something at home, and then the work finds out, and I'm like, yeah, that's because of me. And you know, but they were like, you can't drive a company vehicle, but we're gonna give you a job, but you gotta provide your own vehicle. And you know, I was just so grateful for that. And about like maybe 8 months into it, I was like, how am I gonna do this work with traveling and, you know, not drinking? And it was just, I was really, really nervous to the point where I almost didn't take the job, because I didn't think I could do it sober. And my sponsor's like, listen, no matter where you go, you have AA. I'm here with you. You know, and thank God for that, because you know what? You can do anything or go anywhere in the world being sober. We don't have to hide from places or not go places or not take jobs. And a couple months into it, I got a phone call. I was working on a beach in North Carolina, and they're like, oh, we have somebody new. We're going to send them to your job site. And they sent me her resume, and she was straight out of college. She was a mechanical engineer. This was her first job. And I got a resume, and I was like blown away by this resume. She came to work, and I was just like to this day, one of the smartest, most intelligent people that I've like ever worked with. And we were getting along great, because she was really good at her job. She helped make my job easier. And everything was going. And all of a sudden, one day at work, something, we were struggling with something, and she said, well, she said, progress, not perfection. And I was like, do normal people say that? Like, I didn't know. I just was like, but I was thinking in my head, there's no way. And then I'm thinking, well, she's so young. Maybe like her family was alcoholics. Maybe she grew up in AA. You know, it's thinking of any possible thing, but there's no way she's an alcoholic. And then she taught one day, she was like, well, I was doing, listening to some meditation on my drive-in. And I'm just like, a couple of the comments that she was making, I just was like, I really started to think. And because we're two females on the project, we were sharing a house together. And what happened was, after work, I'm getting ready to go to my meeting. And I had shared with a lot of people at work that I was sober or in AA. You know, if somebody asked me, I would, but I wasn't like advertising it. And I found myself leaving, and she's like, oh, where are you going? And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to the grocery store, which I was, but then I was going to go to my meeting. And after a while, I'm like, man, I feel like I'm lying. Like, you know, we're taught to be honest in this program. And I was really starting to feel uncomfortable. But I just wasn't, because I'm her supervisor, and I don't, you know, should I tell her? Should I not? And then, long story short, we were in this real small town, and I was going to a meeting, you know, like Monday and Wednesdays. And I was telling these people, I got to know them really well, because it was like the only meeting in the town. And I was telling them, oh, this girl that I live with, I don't know if I should tell her and this and that. And they're looking at me, and what had happened was, is she was going to the same meeting because she was one of us, but she was going on like Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we had like alternating schedules, and she was telling them the same thing. Like, oh, I don't want to tell my boss that I'm in AA. And these people never said a word. They never said a word to me, to her. And they all just waited. And sure enough, one day I walk in that meeting and she's sitting at the table. And I'm like, I knew it. Like, I had this feeling where I thought it, but I just didn't think that somebody like her and her, you know, what I saw in her work, that she could be one of us. And why, I don't know. But she had taken a stint from college and been to rehab, and she's a full-blown one of us. And, you know, all of a sudden we became, you know, we're co-workers, and then we're going to meetings, we're living in this house, and, like, we're just, like, all of a sudden I'm like, oh, my God, I have AA right here, like, right here. And then I remember saying to her, well, did they put you, because there's, like, 10 or 12 jobs going on in my company, and they put her on mine. And I'm like, do they know you're an alcoholic? And she's like, well, I didn't put it on my resume. She's like, no, they don't know an alcoholic. And my HR department, they do know that I'm an alcoholic because they hired me and, you know, all these different things. And I'm just like, how did this happen? You know, and I'm like, we know how it happened. That's, you know, God working in my life, working in her life. And, you know, about a year later, we were kind of separated, and then we're back together working. About a month prior to that, I was at work, and I was working with a coworker, and her and I had gone to, I'm a huge Eagles fan, and we had gone to an Eagles game, something I thought I could never do sober. And anyway, I ended up telling this coworker all about, she was like, oh, you don't drink? And I'm like, no, I'm not drinking. And I told her, like, we drove 2 hours to the football game, and I told her my whole story. And, you know, it just happened. I told her the whole story. And about 2 weeks after that, I'm in Ocean City, Maryland at home. I get a phone call from that girl and that friend, and she said, there's something wrong. They're like, she was going to call you. She's like, so-and-so is not acting right. She's talking about the girl, the girl in AA. And she's like, she was not acting right. She hasn't been to work in 2 days. And I've gone to her house and she won't come out of her room. And I'm going, oh God. Like, and I'm like, what was the last time you saw her? And she said, well, there was four of us, and after work, we all went out for Mexican. And I said, okay, what happened? And she said, well, we all ordered a margarita, and we asked, I'll just say her name is Jen, that's not her name. We asked Jen if she wanted a drink, and she said no. And then the margaritas came, and they were trying to give her a sip of one, and she, after some persuasion, just like, you know, normal people, oh, try this cranberry margarita. She took a couple sips. And the next thing you know, she was like, you know what, I'll have one of those. And I heard this story after the fact. So, you know, she ended up taking a couple sips of that margarita. She ended up ordering one. And then for 3 days, she didn't come out of the house because the allergy was set off. The allergy was set off and she couldn't stop drinking. And, you know, because I shared my story earlier that month, this girl called me and I was like, oh no, we have a problem. And they have no idea that she's an alcoholic. They just think they went out to have drinks after work. So you know, I hung up the phone, I got in my car, I said, I'll be there in a couple hours. And I jump on the Cape May ferry to get over there. And I call my sponsor and I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, how am I gonna, what do I do? And she's like, there's a whole chapter in our book dedicated to this. And I know you've read it because we've gone over this, like, met multiple times. And, like, basically, you know, I'm her supervisor. And what that chapter says is, like, we know she's a good worker. I knew that if the person wants to get help, we get them help. And if they don't, and we know that they're an alcoholic, the best bet would be to let them go. And that was my experience. Either my work would have came to me when I was in my drinking, and they would have said, Colleen, would you like to go to rehab? We're going to hold your job. I would have said, absolutely not. I don't have a problem. You know, thanks. I'll go. I don't need this job. That I know that's what they didn't offer me that, but I know that's what I would have said. So I went in, you know, I went in with that mindset, like, I have to ask her if she wants help. And, you know, I stopped and got a bottle of vodka on the way. And I'm like, cause I knew the way she drank and I knew that, you know, she might need some alcohol to get her through. And I asked if she wanted help and if she wants to stop. And she said, yeah, I do, but I don't know how to stop. And, you know, I spent a lot of hours on the phone, and like by 11 o'clock that night, I had her up in New York somewhere at a detox. And we got her there, and you know, I was on the phone with her parents, her sponsor, and then the next day, and I'm not on duty at work. I'm at home, you know, I'm not on duty. And the next day I have to make some calls to my work, and I'm telling them what happened, and they're like, what, like, why are you there? Like, what are you, like, how did this happen? They were like, first of all, I can't believe she's an alcoholic. Second of all, like, why did you do that? And I'm like, listen, like I didn't show up today as a, you know, an employee of the company. I showed up as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous because, you know, this is what we do. And I had to get her help, and, you know, work was second, you know, getting her into a rehab and a facility, you know, that's what I had to do. And you know, she went in that detox, she came out, went to rehab, and she, and work offered her a job. Like she, her job, she never lost her job. She stayed employed, all because if she would have stayed in that house and, you know, they didn't know to call me, then, you know, eventually something would have happened, whether she crashed a vehicle like I did or something. And I just, you know, I was just so grateful. And what it reminded me of is I can't be so afraid to share who I am and what I am with the people around me, because they knew who to call. You know, that one girl knew who to call, but she also, she was so terrified to share with her coworkers that she was an alcoholic. When they asked her to have a sip of that margarita, she, instead of saying, no, I'm an alcoholic, I don't drink, she would rather of just take a sip to quiet them. Cause you know how people can be like, oh no, have a sip, you know? And that was such a good lesson for me, because now if somebody says to me, oh, have a drink, I am very adamant. You know, I share openly at work who I am and what I am. And I have to be like that way if I ever want to have the opportunity to help somebody. And, you know, that was like a really, and it was just, I felt like it was a way where, you know, I remember getting phone calls from the vice president of my company. They were like, how did you know what to do? Or why did you do all this? And I was like, it's a long story, but, you know, it's, you know, this is AA in the program and the kind of things that were, that I was taught. And thank God, you know, what I've learned in this program is, you know, I thought I was coming in here to learn how to stop drinking, right? To learn to control my drinking and to make the pain go away. And what I got through the steps is, you know, a life, like had been mentioned, beyond my wildest dreams. I got, you know, the ability to go through life, to have the tools. You know, our program says that, you know, alcohol, we're undisciplined people, right? And this program gives us a way to the steps outlined in the book, give us a way to kind of keep us disciplined. And that's exactly what this program does for me. And now I have a way to get through life. I have a way, because whether I'm drinking or not, life is going to come at me, right? I'm going to go through difficult things at work, difficult things with my family. You know, I have a lot of, you know, well, family is hard. It's really hard. I have a mother who's suffering from this disease. I had a sister who suffered and suffered so bad through this disease. And after I got sober, you know, right away I said, oh, I have the answer. I'm going to get my sister sober, you know? And I had to be very careful. I thank God through sponsorship and the steps. And I was taught how to be a member of AA when it comes to my sister, and then also how to be a sister. And this program taught me, you know, they taught me that, you know, how to love like unconditionally, how to love, but also love with boundaries. Because when you're dealing with one of us, it can be difficult. It can be really difficult. And what happened was, as I got sober, my sister attempted to try to get sober so many times. And instead, for years, I just despised. I despised the way she lived her life. I despised what she did to my family. And I finally, when I had to make amends to her, and I said to her, you know, I didn't understand. When you told me you couldn't stop, I understand that now. You know, I understand what addiction is because I couldn't stop. And what that did is that allowed us to build a relationship where, you know, all of a sudden, like she's living in a sober house and I'm able to pick her up if she was having a good day and, you know, she wasn't drinking that day or doing drugs, and take her to a conference. I remember taking her to an event like this and the light and how the excitement in her eyes and helping her find a sponsor. And there would be ups and downs. There would be ups and downs through life. But I got to build for 3 years. I got to build this relationship with my sister that I never had prior to her going through her drug addiction. And I got to see her through who she really was. And if it wasn't for AA, that never would have happened. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, and a couple years into being sober, I got a phone call that my sister, she was coming out of jail and, you know, due to come home to my parents' house, and she didn't make it. She stopped to get something on the way home and she passed away. And it was heartbreaking and devastating. And it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to go through. But in the end, you know, I had to be grateful for that time. You know, my sponsor tells me all the time that everybody here on this earth is a temporary gift. You know, we have to be grateful for the time that we had to heal with them versus the time we're going to miss. And I don't know if how I would have reacted if I didn't have those 3 years getting to know her again and sharing this journey, sharing sobriety, and getting to do things, how I would have handled that. Because at that time, AA surrounded me, and all these people showed up at the services and were just there for me. Because she had tried to get sober, so I had developed some relationships in the program, and I was able, and I just remember, like, I don't know how I'm gonna get through this, and my sponsor is like, just be a service, be there for your family, and a parent's losing their daughter is one of the hardest things, and I was there to be the person making the decisions and doing this, and decisions that parents can't make when they're going through this. And I'm just, I was just so, it made me so thankful for this program and able that I was able to clean up that relationship and kind of build a new one. And there was a couple of years had gone by, and somebody had asked me to speak at a meeting, and I was speaking from a podium, and I was sharing this story about my sister, and my dad had come to the meeting. He knew I was speaking, and he asked if he could come, and he was there in the audience. And afterwards, a woman came up to me, and she's like, I didn't share my last name. And she came up to me, and she's like, I think I knew your sister. And she asked, and she had shared a cell with her. And just from my story, and we definitely look alike. My dad came up, and this woman got to share, all these stories about who my sister really was, when she wasn't, with alcohol and drugs, and how nice she was, and how she stopped fights in jail, and she would give her commissary to anyone that needed it. Just all the things that I knew she was, without drugs and alcohol. And I watched my dad. I watched like the tears come through his eyes, and just listening. And I'm like, oh, all because I said yes to something in AA, which I didn't want to do. I never want to get up here and share, but I'm also, like I said, I was told to say yes, and that's what I do, because we never know. We all have a story and a message, and you just never know who you're out there to help. There's so many things, by going through living these steps now. I've been sober over 9 years, and I don't wake up today and like think, oh my God, just don't drink, just don't drink. Like, I hope I don't pick up a drink when I go to the grocery store or something. I don't have those thoughts, and thank God I don't. But my sponsor taught me from early on, like, one of the things we had to do is I had to message her every day what I'm going to do today to protect my sobriety. And I did that for a year straight in like a text message form. And what it helped me develop these habits of what am I doing today to protect this life, my sobriety, because at any point a drink could come in front of me, and I might be tempted to drink it. And I feel like, just because I think I'm okay, I'm good, I'm protected, I have to keep doing these things. So I try to stay in the middle of AA, by going to several meetings a week, working the steps, living the steps, and growing closer to God. I had that relationship even early in sobriety. My first couple of years, I did the steps, I did the amends, I did every inventory you asked me to do. But my relationship with God was just kind of, I believed in God, and I heard the stories and the message, and things happened, and I knew there was a God, and I did truly believe in him. But it wasn't, I just felt like it was, the average relationship with God. Like, I would hear these stories, and I would, how do I build this relationship? And like step 11, saw through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. And I remember my sponsor going, what are you doing? Like, how can we improve this? And she said something to me, and she's like, if you want to improve your relationship with God, you have to spend time with God. You have to give time of your life to God. And about 3 years ago, I started a practice called two-way prayer. And this is all in addition to my 11th step, my formal 11th step that I would do. And I started writing to God. I started writing, journaling and talking to God, writing back. And I would recommend that practice to anyone. You can look it up. It was done early on, by a lot of people. I'm in the Oxford group, and I started this, like I said, in addition to my normal 11 step practice. And oh my God, it like changed my life. It changed my relationship with God, and it gave me this relationship where I didn't fear things anymore. Like, I knew when I was going to God, like, I was confident that like it's gonna be okay. It's going to be okay. And it became one of these things where I did when I was suffering, if they're going through something at work or at home or with family, I would do a prayer to God. But what happened was, is I took that and I started doing it every day. I started doing it as part of my daily 11th step. and things started to change. And I will never forget, you know, my sponsor kind of saying to me, you have to build this relationship, and you have to, just like our disease progress, our spirituality has to progress. And I'm so grateful for, you know, good sponsorship that kind of pushes me to read books that aren't on my, you know, my regular reading list, and pushes me outside of my comfort zone to practice things like spiritual principles for the week, and it's give examples of how I'm doing it, and, you know, how am I being a more honest person and selfless person, and just all these things that without it, I know that I'm growing. And I feel like in this program, we have to keep growing. And the more that I learn, the more I realize I don't know anything. I have so much more to, you know, so much more to learn, so much more to go. But it's exciting. It's this program is so super exciting. And I've done stuff. I just got back from 2 weeks in Thailand, and I spent, you know, four days at a Buddhist monastery, you know, meditating and listening and hanging and kind of living the way that the monks live out there. And like, I remember sitting there like, what am I doing here? Like, how is this even possible that I'm in Thailand at this monastery? Like, something I never in a million years would ever been able to do or even want to do. I mean, not at all. You know, last year I got to, with a bunch of AA people, I walked, you know, I did the Camino de Santiago through Spain, like all these things that AA and just kind of living this program and living this life have given me these opportunities. And what I found is like, I just, AA has given me the chance to kind of like live life and get through the hard things. And I feel like the not drinking is just kind of like a bonus. You know, like I get to wake up and not drink every day, but I get so much more out of this program, so much more. But it's also, there's, you know, I was told if you're not being inconvenienced in AA, then you're not doing enough. And you know, and I try to remember that. I'm lucky, and I try to surround myself with people that are kind of in the middle and doing things. You know, doing things like this, having service positions, sponsoring. Oh my God, like talk about, you know, I heard somebody say, like, you hear the saying, you have to give this program away to keep it. And I heard somebody say to me, you have to give this program away to get it. And like that, like changed everything for me, because I truly, truly believe that like you cannot fully get this program if you are not sitting down eye to eye with another alcoholic, taking them through these steps. Because I learned more about these steps and going deeper and deeper into them and this book by sitting down with another alcoholic, not by going through it with my sponsor. I mean, that's kind of like scratches the surface, but the stuff that you learn taking this through. I'm with other people, and it's been like an amazing experience. I feel like sponsees to me are like my lifeline to AA, because you can't, if you have sponsees, like you're not walking away. I mean, you could, but it's really hard. And it's really hard to like tell them to do something that you're not doing. They keep you connected, they keep you accountable. And it's been one of those things that it's been like one of the most amazing experiences. Like, talk about that amend process when you have an experience that you didn't think was gonna happen and it happened. And this, you have this like God moment. But then when a sponsee comes to you and they have an amazing, immense experience and they're all excited to tell you, I'm like, that's like, you know, I just feel like that's over the top. That's like similar to, I feel like sometimes it's like a high in my life, you know, the excitement and the, you know, just what you feel by living these steps and seeing it, getting that front row seat to somebody, the light coming on and somebody, you know, getting this program is an amazing experience. And I feel like a lot of people miss it. But with sponsoring comes a lot of difficulties. There's a lot of people that don't get it and don't want to do it for the ones that do. I think for, you know, for every five that make company, one might get through the steps, you know, but that's just part of it. It's just part of it. And I've always, you know, I always remember of the women that came in and that sat down. I remember early on when my sister tried to get sober, she's coming to meetings and she's like, nah, off and falling asleep, and she's not going up and going to the bathroom, and like just that fidgety, like newcomer. And I remember being like embarrassed, like, oh my God, that's my sister. And I remember somebody saying to me, like, well, how could you be embarrassed? Like, that's a newcomer, like, that's what people do, and we don't care. Like, nobody's judging you and her. And I was so obsessed with what people thought of me. And now when I see that girl in the meeting and I see that girl struggling and like fidgeting and, you know, can't hold a cup of coffee, that's what I think of. And I try to be that person, because the women in the rooms were that person to my sister. You know, they loved her no matter what. And they kept, They kept trying, and I'll never forget that, and I always try to remember that when somebody new comes in. But this program, like I said, I'm so grateful. I struggle a lot. My biggest, I do a lot of 10 step. So in my sponsorship line, how we do, our 10 step is we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And when they crop up immediately, right? When these crop up, we go to God, we discuss them with somebody immediately. And my sponsor trains us to like do these, she calls them spiritual scans. So we were taught like every time we go to the bathroom, we do these spiritual scans and how am I feeling? Am I resentful? Am I angry? Am I jealous? Thank God I was kind of taught that stuff in the beginning. It's kind of like these disciplines because if we don't address this stuff as we go, it'll build up. And I always think of it as like we come in, we have like this garbage can full of stuff, like the resentment and fear and just full of stuff. And we do our fourth and our fifth step and we get rid of it. But then if we don't do the continue to take inventory, that garbage can just fills back up. And what I see a lot is like was mentioned, like maybe yearly inventories or every couple of months, but I'm taught I address that stuff immediately. And if I don't, that kind of keeps me clean. And if I don't address it in the 10th step, I'm usually I can see it in the 11th step nightly review. And I'm just so grateful for kind of that discipline because it kind of keeps me, it keeps me at a point where I can stay connected to God. And if I don't let that stuff build up, then I can kind of go crazy. And it'll be seen in my work, in my family, the people that I'm, my loved ones. And I just found by doing it's crazy how much AA can have a benefit on the other parts of our life. Like my biggest, probably my, most of my 10 stuff are with work. People are not doing what I want them to do. My company's not running the business like they should. And but so many times I'm sitting face to face with an employee and maybe I'm doing disciplinary action or maybe a promotion or something, and you're having those like uncomfortable conversations. And I get taken back to like the uncomfortable conversation you might be having with a sponsee. Well, listen, if you don't want to do these things, I'm not going to be able to work with you. Like all these, and it reminds me of like, or the uncomfortable conversations with the men's, right? That stuff is hard, but so much of it I had taken down, and I'm now a better employee because of it. Even like standing up here and speaking, the other day we had to do a big presentation at work and present this project. And my coworker was like, I don't want to do it. Like, I don't want to stand up there. And I'm like, I can do it. It's fine. And I thought about it, like, think, just by standing or even sharing at a meeting or just, if I ever think back to the first time I ever spoke at a meeting and I volunteered to give a presentation at work only because like, this stuff in AA has like, has helped me. Not too long ago, our company came out with this like supervisor development program and they're going through these characteristics every month and these different development program and I'm going through the list and we're sharing all of them and I'm like these are all AA spiritual principles and I'm going through and I'm like sharing people are like I'm like stating things I've learned in AA in the program and people are like they're like where did you come up with that do you read books on this stuff and most people that know me I'm like I learned all this from AA and all it is it's like doing the right thing it's being an honest a trustworthy employee and kind of like being proud of who you are, admitting when you're wrong. You know how many times at work previously where I would make a mistake and I would be the first to put it on somebody else, blame somebody, divert it away from me. And now, I try to be the first one to admit I made a mistake. How can I learn from this? And another big thing I was taught is like my work, I used to get so worked up about fear and work and I'm gonna lose my job and I'm not good enough. And what my sponsor was like, listen, that's not your real job. Your real job is to be of maximum service to God and those around you. She was like, your job, she's like, that's just what gives you your paychecks so and you keep a roof over your head so you can keep helping others, maybe do some travel. She's like, but that is not your primary purpose of your job. And once I had that kind of outlook, all of a sudden work, it was okay. I could make a mistake. I could let things go. I could admit I was wrong because I was taught, like, I work for one, an audience of one. And what other people think of me, it's none of my business. And that was like kind of like a game changer for me at work where I could kind of let things go and not, let it ruin or consume me the rest of the day or, kind of consume me to the point where I wasn't being helpful or useful to anyone. And so many things in this program I've transformed over to family, to work. When I got sober, I was terrified of a relationship with my mother. Like my mom had this, she when you walked into her house, before you even got to her kitchen, she had a laundry room, and there's like a big bar set up there. So when you walk in her house, it's like a tradition. You stop at the bar, you pour a drink, and then you like step into the house. And I love going to see my mom because I could, she drank, started drinking at 9 o'clock in the morning, and she would like, it was okay. So when I got sober, I'm like, I don't know how I'm ever gonna go there again. I don't know how I'm ever gonna speak to her. And she, you know, I pray every day that she finds her way here, but she hasn't yet. And it took me so long. And also dealing with another, a family member alcoholic is very, very difficult. And my sponsor taught me things like, you know, just be of service, see what you can do to help. I was taught to move my feet and my heart will follow because I did not love my mother. I didn't love her for some of the stuff that she had done in my life. But I also wanted to build that relationship because I can't, previously I would just ignore it, you know, just ignore it, hope it'll go away. I don't have to talk to her. But that's not what the way I was taught in this program. And, you know, today, you know, I was able to make amends, and today I have a relationship with her. And I remember the day that I was visiting, and I was just doing what I was supposed to do. My sponsor said to me, treat going to visit your mom like service work. Pretend she's a newcomer. Treat it like AA service work. And I was like, oh, I can do that. Like I'm helping strangers that I met at a meeting, sitting down with them for hours, going through the steps, but I can't go help my mom move some furniture. Or I can't go help her cook some dinner just because of, you know, the things she says and the way she acts. So I changed the way I looked at things. And I remember one day I walked in and I just felt this like, I felt this love for my mom that I had never felt before, maybe as a child, but not as an adult. And I couldn't believe it. And I remember calling my sponsor and I'm like, it happened. It happened. Like, I feel like I love my mom. And it was just one of those things where I had to keep doing this. I had to keep doing what I was, you know, keep doing the things that were suggested, and then the relationship will build and it'll mend itself. And that happened with so many aspects of my life, my family, co-workers, just different people. You just do what you're supposed to do. And it's kind of like we do what we're supposed to do and God takes care of the rest. Like we're busy over here, you know, doing God's work, you know, doing what I'm supposed to doing the steps, you know, saying yes when people are asking me things. And then in the big picture, God takes care of all the hard things. And I truly believe that. And I wouldn't be standing here or in AA. And some people say to me, why do you keep going to the meetings? Or my family even, they're like, well, aren't you good now? And they see, you know, my life is completely transformed, completely transformed. And I'm like, and I can't step away. I have to keep doing these things. And why, you know, why would I? You know, if I write down like all the things that have happened in my life and where I'm at, and it's not even like where I am on the outside, it's more like where I am on the inside. You know, I learned this meditation technique when, you know, over there in Thailand, and I started practicing when I got back. And all of a sudden, you know, we're taught pause, you know, when agitated or doubtful. Well, my pause would be like 10 seconds, or my meditation was 10 minutes in the morning, but I really wasn't diving into the meditation. I really wasn't digging, getting into a place where my mind was fully clear. And after coming back, all of a sudden, my days got a little bit, all of a sudden, I'm like, wow, the day's over. Like, I just, you know, work is not, I feel like because of this stuff, I'm able to handle my job, handle more things. I'm able to get through the day a little bit easier. And then I start researching all this meditation. Like, it is like proven out there that regular practice meditation will calm your brain down and it will allow you to focus and think clearer. But AA has been telling me that for years, but I did it, but I was doing it on the surface. I was doing it to check the box, you know, with this stuff. And the more I dive in and dig into the stuff that's available to me and that the, you know, it's kind of presented to me, the more the benefits I get. And why would I ever stop? I'm so grateful for AA, for this program. I strongly believe in good sponsorship. My sponsorship line, my sponsor said we're like a free legacy plan of sponsorship. So we study the traditions. We just finished a huge concept study. I love that seeing the concepts hung up here, because you don't see that real often. And oh my God, what I found from studying the concepts was the business strategy that we use in the concepts. I'm like taking some of the stuff that I'm learning and I'm how can I apply this at work? Because I feel like they really know what they're doing when it comes to the business aspect of AA. And to be honest, I was so impressed. I was so impressed when I was learning kind of like the ideas and how they run things and do the business behind it. And I was like, why did I take so long to kind of really dive in and understand this stuff? because not only am I understanding AA, but I'm taking it, what I've learned, and I'm able to apply some of it in my life. It's just every time, the more I dive in and learn about AA, the more I'm just super impressed. I love this program. Forever be grateful, and I hope I never get to the point. I heard one time, like, you know, don't let the AA, like, your AA life take away the life AA gave you. And, you know, I hope I never get to the point that I'm at, I'm too busy for AA, or I'm too busy to say yes or work with another alcoholic. I got a point in my sobriety where somebody had asked me to sponsor, and I called my sponsor, and I'm like, oh, I don't think I have time to take on another sponsee. You know, I have a good amount. And she's like, ah, it doesn't work like that. She was like, absolutely not. You know, this is what you can do. We're going to focus on ways to manage your time. You can meet with sponsees. She gave me this whole strategy. Meanwhile, my sponsor is like 25 women. And I'm like, five, that's a lot. You know, and she gave me all these things, and she told me, she's like, no, she's like, you will. And, you know, I can choose and do what I want to do, but you know, it is never, you know, I listen and take the suggestions of my sponsor. And I started working with that woman, and my life was changed, because all of a sudden I'm back in the book, back going through the steps. And I was like, oh my God. Like, and I hadn't done it. I hadn't had a new person for about 2 years. I just had the same sponsees, and it was like a life-changing experience. And I was like, oh my God, thank God that my sponsor didn't give me a choice. She said, no, you will sponsor her. Because that's what I needed, because I could have got to the point where I said, no, you know, I'm okay. I'm good. I don't need to work with anyone else. But I'm just so grateful for that push, and for this program. So I want to, thank you all for having me. Thank you, Billy. And thank you to AA for my life. Thank you.